Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and have I got a treat for you today, because I am very excited to tell you about a brand new audiobook presentation that we are launching. It is the latest volume of our But First audiobook, a Big Brother 3 blockumentary. Taryn Armstrong and myself are back to go through all of the 2002 breakout hit series, Big Brother 3. This is iconic, seminal television for anybody who is a Big Brother or a reality TV fan. This is one of my favorite seasons of reality television. What you're about to hear in this special presentation is part one of that audiobook presentation, which is now available on sale at robhasawebsite.com/store. Taryn and I are going to talk about why Big Brother 3, why we're doing this, and we're going to recap all of the premiere of Big Brother 3 here in part one of this audiobook. The entire audiobook presentation is massive. It is clocking in at over 23 hours long of collaboration between Taryn Armstrong and myself as we go through every single episode of Big Brother 3, as we talk about every single aspect of the game and its long-term implications on the Big Brother franchise. Taryn and I did this last year for Big, actually at this point it's 2017, and we went through everything for Big Brother 2 in our Big Brother 2 blockumentary, which is available at robhasawebsite.com/BB2 if you want to check that one out, with everything from Dr. Will and Chilltown and Nicole and everything from that season. But here we're going to cover everything and spoil everything for Big Brother 3 if you have not seen it for some reason, as we discuss that game and why it's so important to the history of reality television. The entire audiobook presentation is $9.99. Again, that's 23 hours of content from Taryn and myself. And if you are a Big Brother fan, this should bridge the gap nicely between where we are now and when Celebrity Big Brother kicks off later on this month. For the patrons of Rob as a Podcast, be sure to check your Patreon account, because I will have emailed you a code for 50% off the purchase of this book, if this is something that you might be interested in. And of course, the top tiers of the Rob as a Podcast patrons get all the audiobook presentations included in their patronage of Rob Has a Podcast. Of course, if you want to go back, Big Brother 3 is fully available on CBS All Access. That's how Taryn and I watched all of these episodes for the creation of the blockumentary. So whether or not you go on to listen to the full audiobook presentation, I do hope that you appreciate the nostalgia here, as Taryn and I talk about everything that happened in the premiere episode of Big Brother 3. If you're interested in coming along for the ride with us to retrospect the unexpected, you can go ahead and use the link robhasawebsite.com/BB3 to go to that page in the Rob Has a Podcast audiobook store, where Josh Wigler and I have gone through the first 30 seasons of Survivor and much more there at robhasawebsite.com/store. When you download one of our audiobooks, you have a bunch of different ways to listen to each of them, whether it's the full audiobook file or you can install it as a podcast feed as well. All the instructions are there at robhasawebsite.com/store or robhasawebsite.com/BB3 to hear all of But First, a Big Brother 3 blockumentary. I'm very excited for you guys to listen to this. Taryn and I started recording this sometime during the summer, actually during Big Brother 20. Believe it or not, Taryn was able to somehow also fit in the start of recording this audiobook and ended up going into the fall to record all 23 plus hours of the But First, a Big Brother 3 blockumentary. Hope you guys enjoy the introduction to our Big Brother 3 blockumentary. But First, Volume 3, Chapter 1, The Premiere. Taryn Armstrong, we, much like Big Brother back in the summer of 2002, are back.
We're back. I'm so excited, Rob. I'm so excited to be talking with you again about these old seasons. I'm pumped.
It has been a minute since we last spoke about the older seasons of Big Brother in our first Big Brother blockumentary, when we went back and took a look back at Big Brother 2. And to me, this is sort of the sister season to Big Brother 2, because I don't know if everybody looks at them the same way. I feel like Big Brother 2, Big Brother 3 very much are linked in my mind.
Yeah, very much so. They both had sort of similar vibes. I even feel like they had many similar archetypes in terms of casting. I definitely had them linked in my mind as well.
Yes, and for me, that the delineation comes from the fact that it was after Big Brother 3, I was going to go play in Survivor the Amazon, which changed the way I looked at all of these shows after going out there and being on one. But I was never a bigger Big Brother fan than I was during the summers of 2001 and 2002, respectively, watching these two iconic seasons of reality TV.
Yeah, Big Brother 3 remains as one of my favorite seasons ever. I feel like it's often overlooked in terms of both the characters and the story and the gameplay. I feel like it really hits on all cylinders, and I'm very excited to talk about it.
Taryn, this is a big transition season in my mind for the show. In Big Brother 2, they completely revamped the format from Big Brother 1. I think that by Big Brother 4, the game is formatted, you know, pretty close to what it will remain. But Big Brother 3, I think, is that bridge season where Big Brother 2 was kind of a mess at times. They have it figured out here by season 3. They will introduce the power of veto. And then by the end of this season, after what happens with Daniel Reyes, we will get the introduction for the first time of the Big Brother jury.
Yes, and it's after this in Big Brother 4 that we get the first like real sort of casting twist with the exes, which kind of takes the show in a different direction in some ways. So it also feels like one of the last, I don't know, you might call it pure seasons in terms of just like 12 strangers in a house. You can call the veto a twist if you want, but it's really just an added element to the game that makes it a little more interesting. And it's great all around.
In addition, we have the first house guest to ever get voted out and return to the game in Amy. And of course, we have the amazing gameplay of Daniel Reyes along with Jason Guy. They are a hidden alliance that will loom large over Big Brother for many years. And we also, in our winner, Lisa Donahue, have a template of a under-the-radar player that we will also see have a lot of success in the game.
Yes, and really, I think the first person that we're going to see like an outrage, sort of like, oh, Lisa shouldn't have won. She didn't play the game well. You know, I think that Survivor got that with Colby losing to Tina, and now in Big Brother, we're kind of seeing a similar thing with Danielle winning over, or sorry, Danielle losing to Lisa here. So very interesting how the parallels go along here.
So a lot will change after the events of this season. But first, there was Big Brother 3. Here in this first chapter, we are going to be talking about the players, the 12 house guests, which will inhabit the Big Brother 3 house. We will talk about the first hour of Big Brother 3 as we detail the premiere, the house guests moving in, and ultimately our first head of household here in Lisa Donahue, who will be the first player to pull off winning the first HOH and then going on to win.
Yeah, for so long, this was considered to be a curse. You don't win the first HOH, despite the fact that Lisa did pull this off. It was certainly a lot more difficult to pull off back then when there were fewer HOHs in total. And, the veto still wasn't quite what it was or what it was going to be. And so definitely an interesting thing to track here, especially because this was not a typical competition. This was a very social competition for Lisa to win.
Taryn, for me, I also have a very unique viewpoint on all of this because I went through the casting process and went down to sort of late in June as being a part of the casting mix for Big Brother 3, that I actually went through and read the Wikipedia page for Big Brother 3 and was surprised to see that my name is even mentioned in the casting of Big Brother 3. Yes. Among the people who, over 5,000 applicants to apply for Big Brother, which I think was considerably less than were applying for Survivor at the time, which was part of the reason why I thought it would be a good idea to apply for Big Brother. You know, I had loved getting to watch Dr. Will play, and I'm watching all these people really just driven to their breaking point in Survivor Africa and Marquesas at this time. Like, I would much rather be hanging out in a house for the entire summer. Plus, it was longer. I wanted to be away from my parents' basement for as long as possible. So I really thought that Big Brother was the way to go. And I felt like that only 5,000 applicants. Let me got a shot here.
Yes. And you got pretty far, right? You came pretty close to actually getting cast here.
Yeah, I went to New York. I got a phone call from a casting person, and I had sent out my tape in, I think it was late February for Big Brother 3. And the tape that I had made was basically I was doing an interview with Julie Chen the morning after I had won Big Brother 3. And so I was sort of via satellite, and it was sort of the gag was, like, I had a picture of Julie Chen on my computer, and we sort of had like flapping lips on it somehow. And like, it was like very rudimentarily dubbed in with these flapping lips. And my sister was the voice of Julie Chen, and she was asking me about that, you know, my strategy. And I was talking about how, well, you know, Julie, part of my strategy was, you know, I had incredible romantic relationships with all the women in the house. And Julie Chen was sort of like, you know, I don't remember that. I didn't see that on the show. Like, oh, well, no, it was there. It was happening. And so that was my attempt at it. And it was stupid enough that I got a phone call and I went to go to the casting in New York. And I guess that went well enough that I got invited to go to the Big Brother casting finals in late May, around Memorial Day in May of 2002. And I was at the Renaissance Hotel in Universal City, and was there for about 8 days. And I went through casting, and I saw a couple of these people that are going to be on the show. I very vividly remember seeing Jason Guy. He was in my casting group, and I remember, wow, this is a good looking guy. He's got really great hair. Oh man, he's so much better than me. I don't think that we were fighting for the same spot as I thought potentially at the time. I also remember being transported to CBS. I'm pretty sure I was in a car going to CBS with Tanya. She made an impression on me. I remember her.
What kind of impression?
I said, oh, look at this lady. And then I said, no, I recognize her on the show. Those were the two people that I recognized. And so it had gone, I thought, very well. And they sent me back home. And all through June, I thought I was going to be on the show. And then in late June, you know, I had started to, you know, make preparations with my job that I was going to potentially be gone for the whole summer. And then I got a phone call very late in the game from Robin Cass, who told me, hey, look, you know, we really liked you. And, you know, Arnold was a big fan of yours, but, you know, it's not going to work out. And I was devastated. I was just, you know, crushed that, you know, I was so close to going to go do this. And then I really thought I had it, and it was taken away from me. And, you know, it did make it, you know, somewhat bittersweet when the show came back, because I was very excited to see it. But, you know, obviously to see that these were the people that were picked instead of me was a very tough pill to swallow.
Yes. And I imagine that shortly after the season started, you were able to tell who it was that got your spot.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people talk about, oh, so-and-so took my spot on this reality show. And I usually, you know, 99 times out of 100 think it's BS, because I say, well, you know, how do you know? Who told you that? Nobody told you why they didn't take you on the show. But in my particular case, that I would have to imagine that I was competing with Josh Feinberg, who we will talk about in this chapter, for the same spot. Not only does he bear somewhat of a resemblance to myself, he is of a similar age. He is a few years older than I am. He was also from Queens. I thought he was from Long Island. Maybe he spent some time on Long Island. But so basically, he's from the same part of the country. Looks like me. He's sort of the funny guy. But the irony ends up being that when they are looking to cast Survivor of the Amazon, Lynn Spillman was looking for somebody who was like a Josh Feinberg. I think she liked that character here on Big Brother 3. And personally, I don't think we're that much alike. That there are maybe some things that you could say, like, we could both be a little wacky. I mean, he is, comes off pretty insane at times during this season. He would describe himself as the Joker here in the premiere. And I think that's a pretty accurate description. And so that is ultimately how I ended up on Survivor, where they were looking for somebody who was to, fill the same sort of wild card role that he filled in this season for Survivor. And that is my Survivor origin story. So I do owe, Josh Feinberg taketh and Josh Feinberg giveth as well.
Yes, very, very good that he ended up performing to standard. He did well enough that they made he made them want more of him. It's funny because I remember as a child liking Josh and kind of rooting for him for a little while, and now watching back and in previous times watching back as well, watching Josh and just not really liking him very much at all.
Yeah. Here's a spoiler. I don't think his shtick is going to hold up as well in 2018 as it might. It didn't even really play that great in 2002. It will not play great in 2018.
No. And it's sort of like the wackiness that I enjoyed as a child really just comes off as obnoxious to me as a slightly older child.
Taryn, I don't know about you, but watching these seasons, I can't help sort of contextualize what these players would be like and how they would be received in modern times. Just to, sort of put a time and a place on where we are. When we did the Big Brother 2 blockumentary, I believe we did that during the spring. I guess it was maybe Big Brother Canada 5 might have been going on, but we're actually recording this during the summer of Big Brother 20. So the, Twitter reaction to people is sort of going through my mind. And I do think that there are some people that might be more or less popular based on social media had this season been airing in the real time of now.
Absolutely. 100%. Like, and that's true of, I think, almost any season. I mean, I even think about it in terms of Big Brother 2 and Dr. Will and all of the, he certainly wasn't that popular, until toward the end of the season, with the fan base. But even then, like the kinds of things that he was saying, for like faking having cancer and all of these, like really, some bad things, would definitely not play in today's audience. Like he would be like blacklisted from the fandom if he tried that stuff in modern time.
All right, so we will note those things as they come up. But I guess is there anything else you want to say before we get to the premiere of Big Brother 3?
No, I think we've said it. I just again, like this is one of my favorite seasons, and I think there's so much that it has to offer. So I'm very, very excited to get into it.
Big Brother 3 would air on CBS on the night of July 10th, 2002. It would finish airing on September 25th, 2002. So that it is going to start about 2 weeks after the modern day Big Brother seasons tend to start, which ends up being around the last week of June. I think it was maybe Big Brother 15 might have been the first season that ended up being on the June side of 4th of July. But for many, many years, it was always, you know, a few days after 4th of July was going to be the premiere of Big Brother.
Yeah, I never really kept track. I always like, for a while when I was a kid, Big Brother would always surprise, like I'd forget it existed in the time that it wasn't on.
Yeah.
And then like it would be on again. I'd be, oh, this show. Oh, this is my favorite show. I'd get very excited.
And just to set this up in terms of what we're going to do, if you did not listen to the Big Brother 2 documentary, we are going to go through all of the episodes as they happen. If you want to do a rewatch, the easiest way to watch along with us is to go on CBS All Access. They have, you know, it's very easy to get to all these episodes, where for many years it was very difficult to be able to track down full seasons of Big Brother. It's actually pretty easy to do. I would highly recommend to do the commercial-free option on CBS.com, because that will add a lot of time to your runtime on all of these episodes. Because if you watch, you know, four or five commercials in every single commercial break, it is a lot more digestible to get through without the commercials. And I also swear by, I have a Google Chrome plugin which allows me to speed up or slow down a video. There's a number of these. And if you so choose, you want to get through the food competition here or there, I think that's also another very useful thing to have if you so choose.
Yeah. When you're watching these seasons back, you do not have to watch the food competitions. We are watching them for you so that you, when you listen to this podcast, you can hear all the best bits and we'll make fun of them. We suffer so that you can prosper. So feel free to skip those and any of the overly lengthy ceremony explanations and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Taryn, I will also add that I think that Big Brother 3, building off the success of Big Brother 2, seems to have more of a budget to play with. I mean, we had a lot of fun in the Big Brother 2 documentary talking about the competitions, which were throwing CDs into a pool and, racing remote control cars and contests that were just standing in the backyard with a legal pad of writing answers down. It seems like the one time they really spent some money in Big Brother 2 was when the survivors showed up, that they had the competition, which was supposed to be like they put snow in the backyard. Here, even from the first challenge that we're going to see, I think that the production value and the production quality of Big Brother 3 is going to be up from Big Brother 2.
Yeah, I think at this point, the show has proven its concept, right? Where like Big Brother 1 was a bit of a failure. They tried their best to sort of revamp it and try this new experiment with Big Brother 2, where it's much more of a game, and it was very successful. And so I think they had a lot more confidence coming into this season with the show. And so they probably felt a little more comfortable putting a little more money into it, making it just, stand out just a little bit more.
Yeah, Taryn, from the Wikipedia page, there is a quote here with Les Moonves saying he was happy after Big Brother 2, after a boring first season. And they were talking about how they were going to make some changes to the series. They seemed very concerned with banners. And of course, that loomed large in Big Brother 2. I don't know exactly what they did, but maybe they started the idea of lockdowns anytime a plane was in the area.
Yes, and maybe that was part of why this was a this first competition was a tree, so that they'd have these big branches with leaves above them, so they wouldn't be able to see.
They were afraid on the first night. Yes.
Yeah. Plus, like, because it was the first night, nobody really knew what was going on enough to send a plane. So they probably wanted to get their big, long endurance challenge out of the way.
Get it out of the way. Taryn, I'll also say that the house looks nicer here in the start of Big Brother 3.
Yes, definitely.
From Big Brother 2.
Yeah. It looks
not nicer than now.
No. But for the house that they were in back then, before Big Brother 6, it definitely looks a little bit nicer. And it's better decorated. Just in general, it's just the production value has gone up a little bit.
Yeah. We end up getting sort of a big montage of everybody that is going to be in the cast getting their keys, where I'm not sure exactly at what point, or even if they did it in Big Brother 2, that we don't meet the people really individually. We just see a montage of everybody sort of getting their keys. Taryn, do you have any recollection on, I know how they do it on the modern day seasons, like it's very formulaic, but this was just like a mishmash of everybody.
Yeah, it was just a big sort of montage with them getting the keys and then giving like some one-liners here and there, but no real like true introduction like we get nowadays.
Yeah. Did anything stand out to you from these little snippets of people? And then we'll do, you know, we'll drill down and talk about each of the 12 house guests as they come in.
I loved that Kiara got her key from a hot dog vendor.
Yes. Yes, she did.
I really enjoyed that. Amy was looking at her reflection in the key. She was like, oh, it's like a mirror. It's very, very indicative of who Amy is. Lisa says, no more bartending for me, which you'd think would be like prophetic, like, oh, she's going to win the season. No more bartending. But the last time I saw a picture of Lisa, she was actually like doing catering or something. So back to full circle.
Yep. Jason said he's playing for a higher power. Danielle tells us she is a classy, sassy diva. Marcellus is doing it in style. Roddy is driving around on a golf cart.
He's going to play this game to a T, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk through the cast. Okay. And then we'll talk about then their load in. And so let's go in the eviction order. If that works for you.
Sure.
And let's discuss Lori, who honestly, before we went back and watched this, I did not recall anything about Lori.
It's weird because I actually remembered like way more than I thought I would about Lori. Like she looked so familiar to me and I was like, why? Like, isn't she the first? Why does she look so familiar? I guess I've just watched this season so many times that like every single person looks familiar. But usually when I go back and watch a season, the first couple of boots, I'm like, ah, I kind of remember this person. Especially if we're talking about Survivor where there's, you know, double the seasons. But Lori, for whatever reason, just really stood out to me as like, I really recognize and remember her. It's weird to think that she's going to be gone so soon.
Yeah, she is the Midwestern mom. I think she has three kids. She's actually 37 at the time of the airing of this show. And she is going to end up on the block in the first week and be the first player voted out of Big Brother 3. And I think she does probably fit in that mold of being kind of wacky in terms of being a first boot.
Yes. And, it, you know, definitely going to continue with the formula that was kind of introduced in the previous season where the sort of the older house guests are going to usually go out first. And then that's going to continue to exist throughout most of Big Brother. The older house guests are always going to have a much more difficult time with the game of Big Brother.
At a disadvantage. Okay. The second boot is also going to be somebody in that mom role, maybe not archetype. Here is Tanya Paoni. She is from Vegas. She was only 35 years old at the time of playing Big Brother, and I believe she had five kids.
Yes, yes, she mentions she has five kids, and you will be forgiven if you have completely conflated Tanya and Cheryl from Big Brother 2, because I do that all the time.
I Tanya is very memorable in my mind. It's also very sad for me that all of these people that I grew up thinking were the old people on the show are now all younger than me as I rewatch Big Brother 3.
Well, luckily I don't have to deal with that yet, so I have no words of comfort there.
I keep getting older and Tanya Paoni is still the same age.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she's only looking better and better to you at this point.
Yes. She would be, you know, an archetype that does not tend to do well on Big Brother. The femme fatale, yeah. if you will.
The hot mom, yes.
The Risha of Big Brother Canada would also be in this mold.
I feel like they kind of gave up on this role. maybe it was after Tanya.
Risha actually, was a throwback.
Yeah, it was. She really was. Yeah. And she failed for very similar reasons. So I just think for whatever reason, this role just doesn't work out on Big Brother.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because, I mean, in the case of Tanya, I mean, I believe she's married, so she's in there, like, you would think that maybe if she was single, she'd be in a showmance or something like that, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, they don't know what to do with her.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's not quite like that role of the motherly figure where you kind of, you know, you look up to the person, you have that sort of mother-daughter or mother-son bond with them, because she's kind of, you know, she's like attractive and she's flirty. So I don't know. I think it's just like it's too much of a hybrid role. People don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I believe that she was somebody that there was like some smoking gun stuff on her heading into the season. And from a link here on the Big Brother Wikia, it would not be her final run-in with the law for Tanya Paoni.
Yeah, she was the one who had the car.
A 2010 incident, long after the show. So. That it does, we don't expect to see her too much on the reality TV circuit in 2018.
She's not showing up to the Big Brother 20 premiere.
I don't think she was there. Okay. Taryn, after Tanya Paoni, going in the order of original eviction, is that the way you want to handle this?
Sure.
Okay. Amy Cruz would end up being the third player voted out on Big Brother 3. She would return later on in the season, being the first person in North American reality TV to be voted out and return to the game. Now, Amy Cruz, as I was watching this last night, Taryn, to me, jumped out to me as the person who I think would benefit the most from playing in the social media era.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I think people would stan her.
I completely agree. I think that even now, I feel like she's probably one of the most stanned, house guests from these first few seasons, just because she has everything that the current social media environment wants, where she doesn't care. She's gonna get drunk. She's gonna fill up her bladder. She's gonna talk her face off, and really just pretty great casting. That reminds me of some of the better casting of some of these current seasons right now. So, yes, definitely Amy. To think that if she hadn't come back, the legend of Amy would not exist.
I don't know if it would not exist, but it wouldn't. The second act, I do think, benefited her.
The second act,
she loves cheese. Yeah, she loves cheese. She loves alcohol. Mm. She has a love-hate relationship with Marcellus.
This is my favorite relationship, other than obviously Danielle and Jason. The Amy and Marcellus relationship is easily my favorite. It's so good because Marcellus is later going to have a kind of similar relationship to Janelle, and which makes me think that Amy is the early archetype for Janelle, because Marcellus is just so hard on his quote unquote friends, and Amy is just the perfect foil to that.
Okay, the next player to go out is going to be Eric in week 4, and he is going to be part of a showmance with Lisa. This is a season, Taryn, which is going to, like a lot of the Big Brother Canada seasons, feature basically these two showmances, which are going to be working together closely in this first half of the game, in Eric and Lisa and Kiara and Roddy.
Yes, the famous Lisa Eric showmance. I think most famous for Lisa not voting Eric back into the house, and then also his hilarious sleep talking.
Yeah, he is hilarious sleep talking. He's a firefighter. He was in the Showmance with Lisa. Do you have anything else that you could say about Eric?
Well, I did. I thought that his intro package was actually the best one. He says, when the lights go down, I'm full of surprises.
Which is yes.
Very creepy. And
true.
Yes, exactly. And if it helps him win the show, he will hook up with girls. And he says, just like that.
Yeah. He's sort of, to me, he's like the little brother to Roddy, who I think is a much bigger factor in the show. And so I don't remember a ton about Eric, except for, obviously, when Lisa has that opportunity to vote him back into the house, and she votes for him not to return. So we'll talk about that in detail. A huge move on Lisa's part. In the fifth week, it is going to be my buddy, Josh Feinberg, who ends up going out of the house. What can we say about Josh Feinberg?
I love his diary rooms. They remain... I think this is something I'll talk about throughout the season. I think Big Brother 3 had some of the best diary rooms in the history of the show. I think Marcellus is top-notch. Danielle is amazing. And I think that Josh was fantastic in the diary room. And it's part of why I liked him as a kid. And I was sad to see him go in this spot as a child. And he is a character.
He comes in. He is a huge, huge personality. Some people like him. Some people, namely Marcellus, do not. Taryn, I know that this is going to be a very obscure reference by the time most people hear this, but you know, he's walking around in the diary room with a cup of coffee, very Winston-esque.
Yes, and he even like had his mug. Like it's almost like he predicted the Michaela move on Survivor, like well in advance. He was like talking about how he wanted to target Marcellus, and then he brings up the mug and like takes a sip, like evilly, like he's sipping his tea. Well ahead of his time, Josh Feinberg.
Yes, he is a man with no boundaries, which I think makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It is not ideal strategically. He would also go on to be the first Big Brother house guest to appear in Playgirl magazine.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me.
Yes. I'm not sure if that's far enough back that those pictures do not exist on the internet, but that is a fact about Josh Feinberg.
I have unfortunately received tweets with those pictures, so they do in fact exist.
Tweets?
Yes. Mentions. People mention me and they put those photos in the mention, and I'm just...
What's like, the context of the tweet?
Hey, have you seen this before? Like, isn't this crazy? It's Josh from Big Brother 3. Oh, thank you. I so really wanted to see that.
Yeah, I wonder what he's up to now, Josh Feinberg. I did go on to meet him a couple of times. I thought he was a super nice guy in terms of meeting him. I know he was in Los Angeles. I don't know if he is still here, but he was, pretty fun the time or two that I met him.
I can imagine.
So. Yeah, I'm sure we'll have some fun talking about him here in the Big Brother blockumentary. Okay, then the next player who ended up going out of the house is going to be Kiara. And Kiara, you know, I remember, you know, her being sort of, you know, she is one of the popular women on the show. To me, she was always like Big Brother's answer to Meadow Soprano. I don't know if you're a Sopranos person, but I always felt like that she had that she kind of looked like her. She was from New York. Based on the little bit we know about her, she seems to come from a, you know, somewhat entitled background. Don't tell Rockstar.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, when I was a kid, I was watching Big Brother and not The Sopranos, but I did watch it later. I was under the assumption that that Meadow was a like universally hated character for a long time. Would they really want a Meadow Soprano?
Well, I think that Meadow Soprano might not have been universally hated by 2002.
Okay. So she wasn't into the teenage angst phase yet.
Well, I don't think it was as bad. Okay. I think that both the Sopranos kids really wore thin as the show went along. I mean, the show's going to be, the Sopranos, I think, ends in 2007. So they still have 5 years and at least two or three seasons of Sopranos to go.
All right. Makes sense. Yeah.
And they never brought Kiara back.
No. Well, it's funny because Kiara is presented in this episode as like the sweet one, like she's the sweetheart, America's sweetheart. But my overall image of Kiara is kind of like the overbearing, you know, in a showman's got really cocky popular girl thing. So it'll be interesting to track the sort of transformation there, or if that even exists, or if it's just in my head.
Yeah. So I don't remember a lot about what she did in the game. I remember she was with Roddy, and I remember she was from New York and sort of from a wealthy family. But I don't really remember a ton about what she did along the way. The next person to go out is going to be Jerry and Taryn. In my memory, Jerry went out much earlier than week 7 of Big Brother 3. In my mind, I thought he was like the second or third boot.
Yeah, it's funny because when you talk about Jerry from Big Brother, you think Big Brother 10. Like, that's the old man Jerry. Mm-hmm. You don't think about Jerry from Big Brother 3, even though he did make it very far. He made all the way to week 7.
55 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, just doesn't make that much of an impact here. He is going to be the very first winner of the veto, but other than that, you know, he's also going to be the first person to win the veto twice. Veto King
wow.
Jerry. Yeah.
The Veto King Jerry. Yeah. He wears a Darth Vader-esque sleep apnea mask. I do remember that about Jerry. And I think he ends up getting his own room because nobody wants to be in the room with Jerry and his snoring and sleep apnea.
Yeah.
So he's kind of always HOH in a way. Okay. Then the next person we got is going to be Roddy Mancuso. And he, in my mind, is best remembered for being the person who could not even with Danielle Reyes. She called him the devil in the diary room. And that is going to be a diary room which will shape Big Brother history, Taryn.
Yes, I love Roddy as a character. I think he's one of the most fascinating characters on the show. I think he's a very interesting person to watch along the way. I think he had an immense ability to play Big Brother, but he had a very strict view of how it should be played. And part of that has to be from the fact that that there was no sequestered jury. And so it's just very interesting to watch, especially because he went out in a situation where he essentially could have stayed if he had just lied, but he wasn't willing to lie. And so he had this like very strict sense of how to play the game. And he was a very, very social player, very good player. That's why Danielle called him the devil. He was so good at what he did. But at the same time, just so out of touch with how to actually play the game. And that's part of what ends up costing both him and Danielle the win. So very, very, interesting character. I'm very excited to talk about Roddy as we go along.
He is some sort of a golf pro or golf aficionado, but his job title is listed as writer by my brief Google searching. I cannot find anything he ever went on to write unless he writes under some sort of a pen name of maybe Roddy, not the devil, Mancuso.
Yeah, writer is exactly the kind of job title that Roddy wants to have under him. That's exactly who like Roddy is, and he will let you know, an intellectual. And so to be labeled as a writer is just like that's so Roddy, especially if it's not even that like particularly true.
Okay, next up, a person that we have done an injustice by not talking about more so far. Marcellus Reynolds, who is one of the breakout characters here in Big Brother 3.
Yes, this is you know, I think they obviously, when they got Dr. Will, he was very amazing cast. They really got a star out of him. But Marcellus, in my mind, was their first just like truly like right from the get-go, all-star casting. He was amazing in The Diary Room. He was fantastic on the show. He had a very particular set of morals and a way to play the game and a way of speaking that was just so enthralling. Just every line he has in The Diary Room is perfect, and I love Marcellus as a character, and the way that he fits into this game is just so beautiful. You cannot deny the impact that Marcellus has on this game.
He was hilariously funny, yeah, great in The Diary Room. He has all of these little quirks and interesting things about his character. He is a germaphobe. He is a grossed out about a bunch of stuff in the house. And there's all sorts of things that he has complicated relationships with a number of the cast members. And he will return as an all-star in Big Brother All-Stars, and a no-brainer all-star as well.
Yes. He's no-brainer.
Not in the JC version of a no-brainer.
In both ways, he's a no-brainer, because he also is going to create one of the most iconic moments in the history of the show.
Yes. For him. Oh, yeah, and we didn't even get into his exit. Yes. Yes. Probably, if not maybe the most iconic moment in the history of the show, in the top three, for sure.
Absolutely. Really just cements both his legacy and the legacy of the golden power of Vito. It's just a perfect way to kick off the true Vito power. And you couldn't ask for more. It's a beautiful moment.
Yes. Sadly, though, as I look up Marcellus on Twitter, it's very, very sad news for me. You are blocked from following Marcellus Mart and viewing Marcellus's tweets. What did I do?
Oh, my. Marcellus, I guess I am not afraid to say, is also one of the very few people to actively turn down a Taran show invite. He said,
yes.
He said, Taran, no thanks, M.
Yeah. So I don't know what I am a fan of his. I'm not sure what I have done. There's a couple of people in this category of I like them, but for some reason they don't. This is really I'm shook as I go through this, that I did not even realize that I was blocked by Marcellus. I feel like that maybe there are five people that have me blocked on Twitter.
Yeah,
that I know of.
I guess I need to look him up right now too, if you've blocked me after I asked him. No,
yeah.
He is not. Okay, I'm still good.
Yeah. All right. So let's count that. It's hard for me to recompose myself after learning about
this. Rob is heartbroken right now, guys. He doesn't know what to do with himself.
I'm sad. You know, I think this is what I will tell myself, that I don't think it has to do anything with me, that that there was the company that I used to work at, the company that did the fishbowl. I know they worked with Marcellus and with Lisa on some other projects, and I think that maybe those projects did not go great, and I think I am being grouped in by association, but that I do not ever recall having any sort of bad blood with Marcellus personally, but I might be. He may hold me to blame for that things did not go well with the business relationship that he had with the company I used to work at.
Or maybe he thinks, well, Rob, if he had been cast on Big Brother 3, would have done exactly what Jason and Danielle did to me. Therefore, I should preemptively remove him from my life so that he has no chance to do it to me in any situation.
Maybe more likely, hey, this guy is supposed to be like Josh Feinberg. I don't want to have anything to do with this guy. Yeah. But
Josh got this guy's spot. All right. Don't need him.
But, you know, if for whatever reason, if Marcellus had any animosity towards people I used to work with, I mean, this is like at least 5 or 6 years before Twitter was even invented. So Marcellus, I think, carries a grudge.
Honestly, most likely it's somebody on Twitter tagged him and you in the same tweet and said that you said something mean about him or something.
Maybe, but I that go back, check the tapes that I did not say anything mean about Marcellus. Were we counting down like bonehead moves on Big Brother? I mean, does that count?
Yeah, it doesn't even matter what you said or what the context was. People on Twitter will delight in the prospect of ruining your relationship with other people.
Yeah. All right. Well, that makes me. I was so excited when I saw this link to his Twitter. I said, "Oh, I'll follow Marcellus on social media." But sadly, I am blocked. I love Marcellus, and I will not let this affect any of my retrospection about this season. Looks like his picture. Looks like he's on like a newscast or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can picture it now, Rob. You're going to be talking about how not using the veto was a boneheaded move, and it's going to be pretty obvious that it's just because you're biased because he blocked you.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll let the audiobook speak for itself. All right. Then we touched on Amy. She would go back out the second time. Let's talk about Jason Guy here, who... a very underrated Big Brother player in his own right. I think that Danielle, gets most of the accolades for their secret alliance working together, Danielle and Jason. But Jason was no slouch, Taryn.
Yes, Jason is one of my favorite players of all time. He is one boneheaded decision away from winning this game, and that is taking Amy out over Lisa, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I think that Jason played the perfect game for a non-sequestered jury, because he, you know, Danielle was going to take him to the end. He would have beaten Danielle. I think he would have beaten almost anyone. He's such a lovable guy, but he was also just devious enough to play this game in the way that it needed to be played. And I think he is a fantastic, top tier player that, that the public unfortunately forgets.
He is a 25-year-old. He is a born-again Christian. I believe also a virgin. Is that talked about on the show, Taryn?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And so that he will, you know, that he is taken into this crazy world known as the Big Brother house. And I think that we see this crazy world through his eyes on more than one occasion.
Yeah, he, you know what? He kind of reminds me of like a Yule from Survivor, where it's just like, you don't often get people like this on these shows, where like he kind of doesn't belong, you know what I mean? Because he's kind of like, and he would never say this, but I can. I like, he's too good for the show. Like, he's such a pure hearted person, but also like not pure-hearted like these people who are, oh, I'll give up my game for you guys. No, he'll play the game because it's a game, but he's also just a genuinely great guy, and he's way above any of the petty drama that happens, but he's still such a great character on the show. I love Jason Guy.
Yeah, I love him too. He seems to still follow the show to some degree. I'm looking at his Twitter. I am not blocked. That he is tweeting about the tall and the short of it. He thought that was so hilarious. I remember he was also tweeting very active during Big Brother OTT. I don't remember exactly why, Taryn, but he seemed to be invested in Big Brother OTT. Do you remember that?
A big ball smashers stan, I guess.
He's like the ball smashers. He did. I remember. Yeah. He is also working.
He's too good.
Yeah. He works in news I think as of recording time, he works for WESH 2. That is a Orlando, Florida news station.
Yeah.
Or TV station.
I do follow him on Twitter, but he mostly just posts news stories. So that's unfortunate.
Yes, he mostly does post news stories. It's just funny that that these one of the most recent things he posted was about the tall and the short of it.
Well, you know, he wants to get in on that action.
He said, the tall and short of it, starring JC and Fessy, was BB20 at its best. They're hilarious. I'd watch that sitcom. So he loves Fessy and JC.
Who doesn't, Rob?
He loves these iconic Big Brother pairs, I guess, Jason.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's get to our final two. And okay. Let's talk about our runner up, Danielle Reyes. And I think what is very exciting about this project for me, Taryn, is I do believe that Danielle is almost always the answer that is given when we talk about the best Big Brother player to not win the show. And that, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever done a project like this to go back and really take a look at what was there in the same way that we were presented with this question at the top of the Big Brother 2 blockumentary. How good was Will? I am dying to answer the question. Just how good was Danielle? Is she overrated? Is she underrated?
Yes, very, very excited. Danielle is such a great, great character in the history of Big Brother. There couldn't be a better subject for the blockumentary to follow than Danielle. Very, very excited to track her across the season.
Yeah, and I love Danielle Reyes. She was such a big influence on me also. Going into my Survivor season, I loved what she and Jason were doing in terms of that they were going to have an alliance. They were going to hide it. They weren't going to show it to people. I wanted to attempt to recreate that. I had a very poor man's version of that with Dina in Survivor of the Amazon. She was fantastic on the show. She is a boss in the diary room from the jump, Taryn. Mm-hmm. It will come back to bite her as we get to the final two. And of course, the jury is not sequestered. They are watching the show going on and seeing, you know, every week when she's saying, you know, two down, nine to go, or whatever the math is on that, and hearing things that she's saying. But she is really, really cutting in the diary room.
Yes, and we see this right away in the premiere episode. She's talking about how Amy is getting on her last nerve. She's already fantastic right away. Even Marcellus kind of takes a little bit to warm up, but Danielle is on top of her game.
Yeah, she comes right in. She knows what she wants to do, and you know, she has agency of her game from the beginning, and I'm really looking forward. I've never gone back and watched her play here in Big Brother 3, so really looking forward to all that. And I went on to meet Danielle after her season, so I ended up meeting her in the summer of 2003. I met a bunch of these guys I went to the charity event. I want to say it was Reality for Diabetes, which I think they still do. And I went there and, you know, had a great time hanging out with Danielle. She was, you know, super nice. She loved Survivor. And, you know, she's still, you know, actively watches the show to this day. So she is, you know, phenomenal. And I hope that the video supports the claim. And, you know, it was just that maybe it was 2002. We didn't know what was good. Maybe she's overrated. Maybe she's not.
Yeah, I think the main thing is that Danielle herself has even come out saying that she doesn't think it was the unsequestered jury that lost her the game, that she likely would not have won regardless.
We'll be the judge of that.
Yes, that's something to definitely track along the way. And just in general, how she handles jury management and how jury management is seen on this season, because it is so unique. You know, everybody knows that people are going to be outside of the house watching. So that changes the way that people play the game. That's an interesting factor we have to watch out for. And then just, as you mentioned in general, just watching Danielle throughout and and judging her in the same way that we judge Dr. Will, to see just where the legend holds up and where the legend was maybe a little bit exaggerated. I'm very, very interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, it's a great point about, what did the jury, how big of a factor was that in terms of her losing the game? Obviously, she knew the rules. Everybody's playing by the same rules as everybody else. But in terms of Big Brother 2, the people watching the show at home, I don't think that that really impacted Will versus Nicole. And I just think a big part of that happened to be that Big Brother 2 ends up being, 7 weeks of Big Brother 2. Then 9/11 happens, and then they sort of just cobble together the finale and the end game. People just show up, but the finale is a little half-hearted in terms of the much more important things going on in the world. Whereas this season is Big Brother 3, and it's uninterrupted, and there is just people are in that bubble in terms of like the people that went home. They're still there watching the show straight through. And there's not any sort of, major news story which is going to take people's attention off of that. So people are hyper focused on what's going on and what's being said about them. And so it is different. And maybe Danielle is not thinking about those things in the same way as the Big Brother 2 or being somebody who watched Big Brother 2 did not realize the impact of what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to remain bitter about what happened to you in the game when something as massive as 9/11 is going on around you. I recently talked to Hardy for the Taran show, and he talked about just what a huge thing that was and how it really, really did kind of take the wind out of the sails of everyone that was taking part in the whole thing. And then also, I think the edit for season 2 really reflected what a lot of people saw as reality. Like, people didn't think about the edit of season 2 being different than the experience of season 2, whereas Danielle really presented a completely different character in person than she did in the diary room. Dr. Will was just like an extension of his in the house persona when he was in the diary room. And the diary room characters were just the exaggerations of Dr. Will and Nicole. And it really just helped cement this idea that he was the sort of plucky underdog and she was the obnoxious, hypocritical sort of figure. And so that kind of just you didn't really think about it in terms of like how could the edit or the diary room sessions impact the views of the house guests. And I think that's why they never thought to sequester the jury until afterward, when they saw just how much of an impact this stuff could have.
Yeah. Well, we will go through all of it here in this season to see how this woman ended up being the person that the jury voted for. 9-1. It was going away. Lisa Donahue, the winner of Big Brother 3. And Taran, I'm actually really looking forward to seeing, because I think that the narrative at the time is, oh, Danielle should have won. Lisa wasn't that good. It wasn't that they voted for Lisa. They voted against Danielle. I am really looking forward to seeing just what did Danielle do or not do along the way. Did she earn this win?
Absolutely. Lisa, I think, is another person who is underrated in the history of Big Brother, and I'm very excited to track her along the way here as a player, because I really feel like my memory of Lisa is that she starts off a little bit timid, a little bit part of this sort of showmance alliance, kind of in the mix of the, gets kind of hidden by that or it gets overshadowed by that. And then Danielle kind of takes her under her wing and shows her the evil ways of the game, and in many ways, just like a Sith Lord being betrayed by their apprentice, she comes up and steals the win away for using all of the things that Danielle taught her, and I really feel like she is underrated in that regard.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to seeing, just how she played. She ends up being this first HOH of the game. And I do think that she is going to be, the type of winner that will go on to see other people, follow this formula of, that she's just, underestimated, unthreatening. And then here she is at the end and she wins the game.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, for as much as we say she's underrated as a player, she is, I think, the first we see of this archetype that people often don't like to see play the game, where it is effective for them to lie low and then kind of come up at the end. And people, you know, I think the modern day equivalents of a Lisa Donahue are often sort of not appreciated as much, even as she wasn't appreciated in her time. I think people have come around, but this is still not the most popular kind of gameplay that people like to watch.
Lisa Donahue, also from the Rochester area, that I knew some people that knew her from her hometown days before moving to Los Angeles, and so that she is a Western New York native.
There you go. It's funny. One of the things I remembered most about Lisa as a kid, it's just like, for the longest time, what I associated Lisa with the most was a moment where she's in bed with Eric and he says something that just like makes her go, "Oh my God, I've always wanted to hear that." And I don't even remember what it is now. But I think that's sort of like what the image of Lisa was like, even though she doesn't even vote him back into the house, was just like this sort of love struck girl. And people kind of forget that she was this sort of like cutthroat woman who really stood her own in the second half of the season.
Okay, those are the players. We will start to get them into the house here in the Big Brother 3 premiere. There are going to be 12 house guests entering in groups of four. Julie is going to set up the bedroom structure of the house, Taryn. A lot is made in this premiere episode of who's going to be assigned to what, to which bed. Now, Taryn, in modern day Big Brother, are the house guests married to a bed as much as they are here in Big Brother 3?
No. It depends, but for the most part, no, because there's often a lot of switching around. There's the have not room, which really interrupts the flow of like normal bed situations. So no, it's not. It's actually, if anything, I found it very funny how big a deal Julie was making this, like, oh, the different bedrooms and they're going to have to choose their beds. But nowadays, yes, it's actually kind of underreported where the house guests are sleeping, because it actually does make quite a bit of difference, in terms of how the house guests bond, because the people that you share a room with are often the people that you find yourself bonding the most with, because you spend the most amount of time with them. And that's a sort of hidden force of the game that we never really explore in modern day times. I mean, again, like thinking back to last season in Big Brother 2, Chilltown was the chili room, and the hot box room was with the other side of the house. So lot of it really does, yes, top. It comes down to the other people. Comes down to where you lay your head.
So Julie, as the house guests are gathered in front of the house, she says, "Hey, look around. You may find your best friend. You may find your worst enemy." And that's fun that we have all these people that, there's going to be friendships and they're going to hate each other. And we know how it's going to play out.
Yeah, and they're sitting there naive. Some of them like, oh, that's probably not true. We're gonna be fine. There's something to the small details of Big Brother that we do miss out on nowadays, and that's one of them. Like this, just this concept that these are stranger. We take it for granted now, but these are just strangers. And as Julie mentions, they're from all over the country. These are people that would almost never interact in real life, and they're putting them in a house. And you know, by the end of the summer, there's going to be people who hate each other. There's going to be lifelong friendships made. There's going to be showmances. There's going to be all sorts of crazy gameplay that happens. That kind of like small moment that we get to sort of reflect on that gets kind of glossed over nowadays.
Okay, Taryn, the first four people that enter the Big Brother 3 house are Eric, Lisa, Jerry, and Amy. Lisa did not walk in first.
Yes, I noticed. She narrowly avoids walking in first. Jerry holds the door open and Amy goes in right before Lisa. So Lisa is second into the house. Almost puts the curse to bed right from the second gameplay season.
No, the curse will live on forever, Taryn.
Of course. I mean, look, if she had entered in first, then obviously Danielle would have won. So maybe she should have walked in first. Who knows?
Okay. Everybody runs around, looks for a bedroom. Roddy, Kiara, Marcellus, and Lori will be group number two, and they will struggle to find a bedroom.
Yes, they're running back and forth through this house, like freaking out. Oh my God, we gotta find the room. And they're embarrassed because they can't find it. So much is made of the bedroom situation.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, the third group of Jason and Danielle, they will enter the house together with Josh and Tanya. And they will run around and they will be forced to end up on the cots. And Jason will end up on sort of like the bamboo stretcher.
Because, of course, Jason takes the worst possible bed because that's who Jason is.
Yeah. He is a little bit of a martyr. I guess you guys take the bed. It'll be fine. I'll make deal over here. But that's the perfect way you want to play, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, let everybody else take the bed. Don't cause any friction with the house. If you can sleep on the cot, on the bamboo, then you'll be fine. I've slept on bamboo. You could do it.
The royal you, but not me. Just letting everyone know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Did you notice that Josh came in the house? Like one of the first things he said, like, hey, is there an orgy going on in here already?
Yeah. Of course. That's exactly what's Josh. Going on. We also get our first view of the lizard.
Yes, Amy loves lizards.
Yes, Josh is going to love that lizard too.
Mm-hmm. All right, we don't have champagne here on night one. I don't remember if we had any in Big Brother 2. We have looks like wine coolers, whatever the 2002 version of Smirnoff Ice is. We're drinking like white wine cooler. And when I say white wine coolers, I mean wine coolers that are the color white.
Yeah. And Josh is going to be very proud of himself for organizing everyone together and taking the lead because he's a leader. And he's very, very proud of of how he handled the whole situation.
Yes. And so he is the master of ceremonies. He gets this going. Of course, you know, this is the very traditional Big Brother meet and greet. But Marcellus hates Josh's guts from the jump, Taryn.
Yes, and Josh can tell that Marcellus is jealous of him.
Yes, because he wants to be running everything. And Josh will tell us in the diary room about how this was all a move, all a ploy to make Marcellus look bad. Because after they saw Josh talk and saw Josh's big personality, Marcellus would look like such a loser.
Yeah. Yeah, Josh also claims to be a long-term substitute teacher, but guess what? That's a lie. Not actually a teacher. And is this the first time there's a lie about being a teacher? Because that is going to be a classic move in the history of Big Brother.
Yeah, this might be the first time that somebody lies about their job. There's nobody that I can think of prior to this, but I know in Survivor, the Australian Outback, I know that Kentucky Joe lied about his background. I think that he might have. I know that he was. Was he a teacher? And he lied. He said he was a farmer or he was a professor or something like that. Maybe he lied about where he went to college, but he misrepresented how well educated he was. So I don't want to give Josh credit as being the first person to lie about an occupation, but for Big Brother, I will say that I'll give that to him.
Yes. All right.
Yes.
And he's very
staple.
Yes, he's very excited that that Jerry bought his lie. He's all, mm-hmm. Jerry. He completely bought it. He bought my lie. Like, I don't even know what that noise was.
He's got a lot of crazy sounds in the diary room for Josh Feinberg. Lisa is from New York, and I don't know if she talks about how that she's living out in Los Angeles. Danielle, this is very interesting, Taryn, says about Lisa, she seems innocent.
Yes. This is a perfect line from Danielle. It perfectly sets up their entire relationship and exactly like who Lisa is. She seems innocent, but we're all competitors here. And I think that's perfect of how Danielle always saw Lisa, and why she ended up taking Lisa, you know, in her wing, and how Lisa ends up, you know, ultimately winning this game. She seems innocent, but, there's definitely a competitor under there.
We hear Danielle from Fairfield, California. She's just as simple. She gives them almost nothing.
Yes. That's Danielle for you.
Yeah. And then Jason is from the South, Mobile, Alabama. He doesn't know what he wants to do with the rest of his life. And, I think that people are looking at him as as he is, you know, the very innocent guy. Nobody is threatened by Jason. So he's really set up well. Any other, what else does Jason reveal?
Well, Amy finds him very attractive.
Yes, yes. It will not work out between them.
No. Quite. I don't know. I don't think Amy is Jason's type.
Yes. I think Jason says he's from the deep South, and Roddy is from the deep North, he says.
Yes, Roddy being his very intellectual, witty self.
Yes, he's so witty. Where is Roddy from? That is the deep North. Marstown, New Jersey. Oh, like Enzo. The Enzo prototype.
There you go. And Enzo wouldn't be here without Roddy.
Yeah. Tanya has 5 kids, we learn. And Roddy says, wow, this is evidence that the stork exists.
Yeah, she looks great for having 4 or 5 kids.
Yeah. So... she has that going for her. Jerry is a 5th-generation Californian. That seems like a weird stat to throw out there.
I can trace my lineage back to the gold miners.
Yeah. I'm not sure how Jerry got on the show here. Not to be sour grapes about not getting on the show.
Well, did you hear his song in the opening montage?
Yeah, I heard it. I mean, like Kent from last season, rest in peace, Kent, who was such a big part of the Big Brother 2 blockumentary, who has since passed, between recording Big Brother 2 and Big Brother 3 blockumentary. He was a big personality that I'm just not sure exactly what they saw in Jerry that said, this is our guy. With all due respect.
I mean, it's just, I don't know what to tell you, Rob.
Yeah. I mean, he's got sort of like gets on everybody's nerves. He's not like he's not a strategist. Like, he's not like has a super interesting job. Like, he's not hilarious. He's not Rudy by any stretch of the imagination. So, yeah, I don't know exactly. Maybe a misfire.
Yeah, I do think they were going for like lovable older guy, not to say that Jerry isn't lovable. I feel like there's
a little wacky.
There's somebody recently that it might have been Scotty on Big Brother 20 that said Jerry was one of his favorite house guests. But
did he say which one?
His fans. I think he was referring to Jerry from season 3, but you never know.
We don't know. We don't know. He's no Summer of Steve 2018.
Definitely not.
Okay. Eric is a firefighter. Hey, we're coming off of 9/11. Firefighters are very in vogue. And we have our hot firefighter here from 2002, Eric Owlette.
Yeah, he is definitely he's supposed to be the dreamy guy that's willing to hook up with girls.
The only Owlette I know about these days is on PJ Masks, but you probably have no idea what I'm even talking about right now.
Nope.
Yep. Kiara will talk about how she thinks Eric is hot. They will end up in the tree together, but ultimately Lisa will be his showmance, not Kiara.
Yeah.
He was single and ready to mingle, Eric.
Oh, very much so. Yes. I always felt like they should have switched partners, Lisa and Kiara.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe in a parallel universe, that's what happened. And then Danielle won the show.
Yeah. I don't know why they're, you know, picking guys that they like and not doing what I think they should do with their romantic lives.
All right. We hear from Lori, and she's from Foxborough, Wisconsin. She has a son and two girls. Amy doesn't like her northern accent.
Yeah. Amy, she's very anti-North accent thing. That's the word for word, a very anti-North accent thing. Yeah.
We hear from Kiara. She lives in New York. Her name is Italian. It means clear, bright light for Kiara. And Tanya thinks she's great.
I feel like this is one of those things. It's like such an early 2000s thing where it's like you really feel like the meaning of your name matters at all.
Yeah. What does Taryn mean?
I don't hear that anymore. I don't know what Taryn means, and I don't care. I'm pretty sure I cared in the early 2000s when I was in middle school, but I don't anymore.
It's
We've
passe.
Grown out of it as a culture. Yeah.
Wow. Lisa has sized everybody up, says, look, I don't see any strong competition here, which is funny because she's wrong, but I guess she's right.
Yeah, it does kind of show, like, she is one of the people here that is
confident
in terms of, yeah, it's like, this is a competition. I'm sizing up my, my competitors here. And she's feeling confident.
She's manifesting the win.
Yes.
Amy says, we have this line from Amy about how this is a more attractive group than the previous season. Now, there was also a note that was in the Wikipedia entry for Big Brother 3 about how Arnold Shapiro also commented about how this was going to be a better looking group than Big Brother 2. And I don't know, was that a note that they got from a lot of people of like, hey, Big Brother 2, that we needed more hot people on the show?
I guess so, but I've got to disagree.
Arnold Shapiro specifically cited Bunky being very hairy as being something that they did not. But then why is Jerry here? With all due respect.
Well, I think I did see that quote on the Wikipedia that that Marcellus was the gay man that is not hairy like Bunky. So I guess you can say in that regard. But I don't know. I feel like, I mean, Lisa is obviously beautiful, but I don't know. I feel like the Dr. Will Hardy combo is kind of hard to beat.
Yeah. Well, they are really pushing, you know, in the promos at the end of the show about how, you know, hey, it's going to be wet and wild when they are going to get in. They're going to unlock the hot tub and get in the slime. And so there is in these early days of Big Brother where I think that's still part of the appeal of the show, but they don't come out and say it. They come out and say it in these early seasons.
Yeah, they every single season they'll do. This is why the bathing suit photo shoot is a staple of every season. Is that like they find an excuse to get them in bathing suits and they get some hot shots and then they use those shots to advertise for the rest of the season. That's very stereotypical Big Brother and just reality show in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So all right, Taryn. We had on night one of Big Brother 2 with this competition where we got everybody, I think they had gross bags of groceries also, of everybody had to get in the car, right? Were there groceries involved with it, with that challenge to win the car?
I think so.
I feel like there were. Here tonight, we see that all of the shelves are we're all in on PB&J after Bunky ended up paying for, or getting paid so that the house had to eat PB&J. From the get-go, we are very much all in on a huge Costco peanut butter and jelly. That's all that's in the cabinets. But they go outside and we see all of the groceries. And so Julie tells everybody here, here's the challenge. Take everything that you want to eat for the week, and then you have to get into pairs of men and women, and then get up in the tree, and then all of the groceries that you have up in the tree, in the bird's nest, you will get to keep.
Yeah, and if they did not see this coming, that they would have to stay in the tree, what are they doing with their lives? Why aren't they watching the show more often? It's look, there's been a whole season of this before.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if it was quite so obvious in terms of what it was going to be, because I did not really remember how this was going to play. I thought like, oh, okay, well, then this is the first HOH competition also. But it was not actually for HOH. We get everybody into, you know, grabbing their bags of groceries. Danielle is very concerned about getting meat. We have all of, you know, some concern about fruits and vegetables. Amy is very concerned about getting the beer. And everybody gets into these bird's nests in the tree. I did hear somebody, maybe it was Jerry, saying, tweet, which I thought was very ironic in terms of where Big Brother's future was headed.
Yeah, it's going to go from Jerry saying that to
Grandpa
all
Lou.
Graphics, all of the graphics on the screen are going to say that. Tweet at us.
Yeah. Okay, so people are up in the bird's nest, Taryn, with their partners. We will see Danielle and Marcellus are in a bird's nest. Lisa and Josh are in a nest. Amy and Jerry are in a nest. Roddy and Tanya are in a nest. Lori and Jason are in a nest. And Eric and Kiara are in a nest straddling each other. That was the way that made it fit the best, Taryn.
Oh, yes. Hey, guys, look at what we're doing. You should do this. It's very comfortable.
The best way to go.
Indeed.
The best way to go. All right. So Julie announces, okay, here is the twist. So the last team to get out of the tree will earn an additional $1,500 a week, or $3,000 for the pair, where they will give away up to an additional $30,000 to a team that ends up going to the final two. And boy, Taryn, CBS had to pay out a lot of money for this one.
Oh, yes. This is the first example of a Big Brother twist just falling right on its face. And yes. That's going to be a great thing to come in Big Brother, where just watching their carefully laid out plans just fail immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure this brought a smile to your face as a early twist ends up backfiring big time.
Yes. I love how this competition is set up, where Julie's like, no bathroom breaks, no naps, you can eat the food. Like, she is strapping them in for like, you might be in this tree for days. This is a true endurance competition before they started coming up with ways to kick them out of their spots.
Yeah, Julie does have to explain also how digestion works. She says, you can eat the food and drink, but remember, no bathroom breaks, people.
Yeah, Amy needed that reminder and it still didn't work out.
No, Amy is going to just crack open. She has a six pack. She's like, guys, I have a big bladder, okay? And she goes right to drinking. And Jerry had to have known that they were screwed.
She just immediately gets drunk and just immediately, I have a big bladder. Don't worry about it. Oh my God, I don't have a big bladder. I'm regretting this. Oh my,
it is not as big as I remember. Yeah.
Marcellus just wants her to be quiet. He is not having any of this.
Yeah. Danielle is getting buttlock. Josh and Lisa are talking and they're having a productive conversation. It seems like that his social charm is somewhat working on Lisa up in the tree. And we are seeing a couple other people feeling like that maybe they do not want to go the distance on this. Danielle specifically, she very quickly realizes that this is not a good thing for her game to win this competition.
Yeah, not only would it out her as a competitor, but it also puts a target on her back in terms of like, oh, why is she getting more money than us? It links her together with Marcellus, which is obviously not a great idea considering that Marcellus is an early target of the house at the moment. So she is going to come up with an altruistic reason for dropping out of the competition, which is that I need to save the meat. We can't stay up here and ruin all the meat.
Yes, the meat is going to go bad if they don't get down. But Marcellus wants to stay up there. So she lets it go on a little while. Obviously, Amy will need to get down and have a bathroom break. We are also going to see Josh screw up. That Big Brother starts to get persnickety with the rules here and say that, oh, Josh's foot touched the nest, he's out. I think they needed to get everybody back to being in the house and playing the game. So they just started like disqualifying people willy-nilly for things. Eric and Kiara are going to be disqualified. What did they do?
Well, Kiara had to go pee as well, actually. She was she was feeling sick, because she needed to go pee so badly. So the Amy and Kiara both, disqualify themselves by needing to go to the bathroom.
So we have six people in the house, six people that are out in the bird's nest, Taryn, and it is a classic Big Brother trope that the six people in the house say, hey, why don't we make an alliance? Why don't we make this? This could be the final six.
There you go. Yes, Eric, Josh, and Jerry get together very quickly. They start forming an alliance of non-tree people. And Josh, he just wants Marcellus out. He's trying to organize. Marcellus is going to be the first boot.
Yes, he feels like Marcellus is negative energy. And that's why they have to, everybody needs to get Marcellus out of the house. Luckily for all of us, Marcellus will not be the first boot out of the house, but that is who Josh wants to target early on.
Yes, and he's even to take this pitch to the women as well, and he's got all six people in a room, and he's pitching, oh, we're going to take Marcellus out, and if I don't win HOH, then I can go up on the block next to Marcellus. That'll be fine. And in the diary room, he's like, well, that's not going to be fine. But like, I don't understand what his plan was in terms of offering to be a pawn and then somehow taking it back. But
he's a team player.
In general, this comes off as a very, very early overplay here.
Yes. Yeah. An early overplay on night one from Josh Feinberg. Okay. Back to the trees. We talked about the meat, which is decomposing so rapidly, very much on Danielle's mind. She makes another boss move in the early going of this game, Taryn.
Yes, she just drops the meat. She said, I'm making the call. And Marcellus is annoyed. He's not annoyed at Danielle, but he's annoyed that he couldn't win. And I love how this was edited too, where we didn't know that the reason we didn't know that Danielle didn't care about the meat until afterward. Like it was this big storyline about the meat. And then Danielle, she's like, I got to save the meat. And then after all of that plays out, she goes, I didn't care about the meat. I just didn't want to go the distance in that competition. Great stuff from Danielle right from the premiere episode. I love it.
Yeah. And Jason, we hear him like, oh, man, that really stinks. Thank goodness Danielle's looking out for us. She just wanted to get that meat saved for all of us. And that was so nice of her to get down. I know she didn't want to. So he's a very sweet guy, Jason. So it's now Tanya and Roddy versus Jason and Lori. And ultimately, Roddy and Tanya are going to be the final team to be disqualified. And Jason and Lori end up winning the competition over 4 hours in the bird's nest. And they are primed and ready to rack up the bucks for every week they both stay in the house.
Oh, yeah. Jason is kind of annoyed with himself for winning. He didn't really want to, but he just ended up winning. It's very indicative of him and Danielle's relationship where, he had the same idea, but didn't get the follow through.
Jerry says that he doesn't think that Lori and Jason are going to be around to pick up 30K. And he's half right.
He's a prophet. We already said, you know, tweet. First veto king. It's Jerry's. Yeah. Jerry's going to be a standout character here, Rob.
Yeah. So back to Josh Feinberg's plan. So he wants Marcellus out of the house, but he is going to then try to hang out with Marcellus. Shades of Brett hanging out with Scotty to throw everybody off the scent, Aaron.
Yeah. Again, Josh just he's jumping in full throttle. He's gonna win this game on night one, and nobody's gonna see it coming.
Okay. We end up getting a night one into day two montage. Everybody is up early on day two. We have a little bit of a mystery of what is the bodily fluid on Kiara's pillow.
Could be anything, Rob.
Could be anything. That I believe that the show is telling us that Kiara has a drooling problem.
Yeah, you know, things happen.
Could have been Lori, I guess. Could have been part of the reason why she was the first person out. Okay. We end up seeing Danielle. It makes breakfast for everybody. And we see Julie Chen, that she's super casual here on day two. Not one of the super casuals who might have been checking out the premiere of Big Brother. She is in jeans and a cute top here on day two.
Yeah, Julie's looking great.
Yeah, yeah. And she's here to help crown the first HOH of Big Brother 3. And Taryn, the crazy wheel is back.
Yes. Yeah. I love this as a first HOH. I really do.
You do? Why? Could you explain how it works? Because they start on, and then we get into like montage in the middle.
We did. There were a couple more things. Jason points out that he wanted to make sure he's up early because he doesn't want to miss out on anything. That's a key strategy to Big Brother as well. That's often overlooked is making sure you're awake for things. So I liked hearing that from Jason. And then they did also give another little quick highlight for here's the HOH closet. Room, which has a bed in it, and you get laundry service, as we've talked about in previous blockumentaries. So very excited to see the HOH closet. And so then they get to the HOH competition. This is how it works. They're going to bring somebody up who's going to answer two questions with the name of a house guest. So Roddy is going to go up first. He's going to be asked which house guest is most likely to want to be the center of attention. And he says, Josh. And then he's going to be asked which house guest is most likely to hit your car and not leave a note. And he says, Amy. And I feel like he's very spot on with those answers. so then Josh and Amy are going to come up. Josh is going to spin the big wheel that's got everybody's name on it. And it's going to land on Danielle. And now Danielle is going to choose between Josh and Amy, which one do you want to eliminate from the HOH competition? And it's at this point that Danielle eliminates Amy from the competition. Josh will move on, and now Josh is going to answer two questions with the names of two different house guests. I do feel like this competition is one that would only work on these early seasons. I feel like nowadays people would just game the system. Yes. But
like
but
the Power App quiz.
Yeah, exactly.
This was the first back, Power App quiz. Yeah.
Yeah, this was
the most
app
annoying.
Quiz. And clearly the Big Brother production did not think very highly of us that we would game the system.
Yes. So the quick answer that we find out is that if Josh Feinberg played on a modern season, he probably would have gotten a Power App because he would have been trending because he was the answer to all of the questions. This challenge favored people that were not the answer to any of the questions, which may speak to why Lisa was the first winner of this challenge, even though that Josh says that she was the person most likely to steal your boyfriend or girlfriend.
Yes, she was flattered by that answer, though.
Yeah, she was like, oh, thank you. I was like, I don't know if that's flattering.
Yes, I did like that Lisa was asked the question, who's the most likely to pose nude? She did not choose Josh. She chose Tanya. So yes. A little bit off on that one, maybe.
Yes, maybe. We don't know. Okay, so It came down to the last couple of people. Danielle wanted no part of that first HOH. So she was in the final three with Lisa and with Lori. And then we end up having now the house has to vote Lori or Lisa. And I thought this was pretty savage that they have Lisa and Lori go in the other room. And then the house votes with paddles and then they come out. And Julie reveals the vote count by a vote of 8-2. Lisa is the first HOH.
Yes. The votes for Lisa were Kiara, Danielle, Josh, Jerry, Eric, Tanya, Amy, and Marcellus, with Roddy and Jason the only people who voted for Lori. Lori, you know, obviously ends up being our first boot. So, you know, unfortunate for her that she didn't have more people vote for her here.
Well, Jason voted for her simply because he wanted that $1,500 for her staying in the house for 1 week and he didn't even get it.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the end of night one. We get a peek of what's to come and we are teased about the new game twist, which is coming, which we know will be the Power of Veto competition, which will debut in the next episode, I believe, of the show. Certainly the next part of this blockumentary, we will talk about the early edition of the Big Brother veto competition. And then we will ultimately get our nominations coming up as we head towards the eviction of the first player of Big Brother 3, Lori.
Yes, and we're also going to get a preview for what happened to the Big Brother 2 cast. Are Will and Shannon still together? Is Boogie,
no.
did Boogie and Krista ever get married?
No.
Also no.
Any question you have about Big Brother 2, the answer is no.
Yeah, yep, pretty much. I like that they did this, though. I feel like, for as much as I don't like, you know, wasted time in some of the episodes, I do like the catch up with and I feel like it's a lot more relevant in the older seasons because, there weren't
pre-social media
alumni. Yeah. And yes. You didn't. Yeah. Pre-social media. You're like, these people were lost to you after the show.
Yeah. When did they stop doing this? What was did they still do it with certain people? Like, were they still like, oh, let's catch up with Jeff and Jordan in Big Brother 12? Or did they stop it like All Stars? Do we know?
They definitely did one for the Brigade. That happened. It wasn't like the season after, though. I think it was a couple seasons down the line. So they'll do it every once in a while if there's something, if there are like quote unquote fan favorites that they feel like are important enough. But now instead
pop.
We get, we get like meet the parent segments. So what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Do you think that it would be a hit if they did like, let's check in with what Mark and Elena are up to this summer?
If it was like, let's check in with the drama of Mark and Elena, I feel like it would be a successful segment, but I don't think they've got the guts to go there.
Okay. All right. Taryn, we have made it through the premiere of Big Brother 3. In our next part, we are going to talk through the first three evictions, 3 weeks of Big Brother 3. Interestingly, this was at a point, I don't remember what the Big Brother 2 schedule was. I think it was also on the same schedule of Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. I'm not sure when CBS changed it, but they used to have Big Brother on Saturday nights instead of Sunday nights. And I remember that it's ironic that the one time of my life that I actually had a social life was when Big Brother used to air on a Saturday night.
Yeah, there you go.
I didn't have that much of a social life.
Well, of course not, Rob. I was trying to be polite.
Yes, thank you.
The graphics for like 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central are like, they're so outdated.
Yes. I think they use like the Courier New font also for all those cards. But we will talk about that. Tara, anything else before we end this part and talk about the full first week of Big Brother 3?
I think we're good. I think we're ready to move on.
All right. Well, Thank you guys for checking out this first part and looking forward to this wild ride over 30 episodes of Big Brother 3 that we're going to discuss here in this audiobook. Looking forward to the ride. Take care. See you in the next part.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Part one of our Big Brother 3 blockumentary. If you want to hear the next 21 and a half hours of coverage of Big Brother 3, you can go ahead and get the rest of the audiobook in our store at robhasawebsite.com/BB3. You'll get all the links to download the rest of the book. And if you go on to listen, really do hope you enjoy that one. It's available for $9.99, 50% off of the patrons of Rob as a Podcast. That's at robhasawebsite.com/BB3. Of course, big thanks to Christine Raddis, Matt Holtzclaw, and Sam Moore for all of the proof listening they did on all 23 hours of the Big Brother 3 blockumentary. Hope you guys enjoyed this very special presentation of Rob as a Podcast, sampling part one of our brand new Big Brother 3 blockumentary.